In other words, there's room for the nice, hefty, difficulty 3, terrain 2.5 caches out there that may take you an afternoon to go do, and as you see, are very rewarding and take you to the areas of parks where you wouldn't otherwise go, and you finally find them. You find a nice big ammo can that you open up, and there's all sorts of goodies in there and travel bugs, and gosh, you come out all covered in scratches and mosquito bites, and you just feel like you've really accomplished something. And other times I think that there's room for, gosh, I just want a snack. I want a fast food type of cache. I think the more the better. I understand that there are those that feel differently. Anaheim, California is an area that is so cache dense now with micros or smalls, 1-1 caches. It has sort of taken over the whole region. Now, again, I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying that's what it is. At the same time, I think that with the software that's available, with the filtering and querying capability that geocaching offers, with the filtering and sorting ability that GSAC offers, there is a way for you to find the type of cache that you like. I'm cache liberal when it comes to that. I will do the lamppost cache. I will do the bison tubes in a tree. I try to keep a balanced diet, Paul. I mean, you know, numbers has never been the most important thing to me. I've been caching since 2001, and I think I just have, it's 1675. Some of that is due to the fact I've taken some pretty long vacations from caching. I've just walked away from it just because life's gotten crazy or other things have interfered.
You were born in St. Louis, and then you were working in San Diego. You find yourself more here in the St. Louis area, going out on caching runs with your dad. I think you guys did a highway caches. There's like 40N40 and Highway 70, I think, has a series of them.
The majority of the cache runs that I've done have been launched out of this area, and they've been done with Goshawk and Leroy, Norm V. Mostly, Goshawk has been the catalyst for those. I've enjoyed every one of them, in particular the 40 on 40 series, because I would recommend that to anyone who is thinking about doing some sort of all-day run for numbers or what have you. What I like the most about the 40 on 40 series is what it wasn't. I was really anticipating a series of 40 caches along Highway 40 that were really going to all be in a guardrail, underneath a phone, or in a lamppost. Boy, was I wrong. This was a series of well-thought-out caches that were in varied containers, varied locations, varying degrees of difficulty, that never got boring. For one thing, it was so pleasant to get off of the major interstate, just go down old Highway 40, so you weren't mired in traffic. You had the ability to stop and go and ponder this stuff. The other good thing I liked about the series was that it wasn't complicated in its setup. There weren't a lot of instructions to read. Everything you needed to know for each of the caches was located in the title. In other words, it would say 40 on 40, number 12, and then it gave a clever title that was applicable, that was basically the hint. The title provided a hint for the cache. Sometimes there was an additional hint, but the nice thing was if you went into GSAC and simply printed out a single sheet, name of the cache and a hint, and whether or not it had been found, it was all you really needed. You know what it's like when sometimes you will do a series of caches by a single cacher, and once you've found one of his caches, now I know what I'm looking for on these other four or five. In this particular case, that was not the way it was at all.
You can do it in a day, too.
Well, we did it in a day. My dad, Goshawk, and I, we did it driving from St. Charles to Terre Haute. Decided we would go ahead and get a room in Terre Haute and spent the night and did a number of caches in Terre Haute. The series and the travel time could be done in a day. In fact, I've spoken to a number of folks here in the area who did just that. The one downside is we didn't have any phone friends. Goshawk and I made the trip out to North Carolina to go to Geo Woodstock. One of the side trips we did, which was a couple days after, we did a series of caches in a nearby town. Someone told us about this series of caches one could do in a cache run and get 50, 60, 70 caches. We'd never done anything like that. Why don't we do that? It'll be something different to do. I think we did something like 60 or 70 caches that day. The majority of them were actually in this series that had the same title. They were done by the same person, and they were generally under a payphone in a gas station, or they were under a newspaper machine, or they were in a guardrail, or they were in a lamppost. They went straight down the road, and they were all on the right-hand side. You pulled off, you got back on. You didn't even have to cross the road, for gosh sake. Would I recommend that to others? Not so much. For those folks who want the numbers, they don't need my recommendation. They've already done it, or they're going to go do that anyway. They don't need me to tell them about that.
As soon as they hear this, they're on their way out there now.
Right. I will typically look back at a caching experience and say, did I have fun? I have had fun doing these numbers runs if I'm with the right people and there's camaraderie. But it's that moment when you kind of want to quit, you're tired, you're hungry, you're whatever, and someone says, let's do this one more. And you kind of find yourself going, well, wait a minute, this is no longer fun.
Is group caching something that's more specific to the St. Louis area, or do you find that type of thing happening in other areas?
The concept of group caching is kind of a large one. There's a lot of different types of group caching. I have been on a lot of hunts with other people, both here and in San Diego, where I've gone out with four or five other people I know, and we have maybe 10 caches that we're going to find for that day. That type of caching I love a lot. It's a ton of fun. It's what makes the sport, takes it to a different level, in my opinion.
They're already friends of yours.
People I know, or oftentimes I may have met them for the first time. I might know you, but you bring along a friend that I don't know. I like hearing their stories, learning what they like, what they don't like, watching their technique in hunting these different caches, hearing their complaints, hearing what they don't like. I have only gone out on a couple of larger scale group hunts. Most notably, I did one about a year ago in a place called Mission Trails Regional Park, which is in San Diego County. It was a group of about, gosh, I want to say maybe 20, 25 people, but it was a hike over North Fortuna Mountain, which is a pretty large peak for San Diego County, which is not known for having much altitude climb. I was not so comfortable going and making that climb by myself, and I thought it would be a lot of fun to go with some other people. There were a series of caches that had been placed in the park. It was a lot of fun to go out and do that with all these people. Otherwise, I'm not sure I would have been able to just go do them all. These dreaded evil cache runs that people will do where they pile in buses or cars and one person gets out and runs and signs the log. I've never done one. I don't think I would enjoy it. There were opportunities in North Carolina this year to do those at Geo Woodstock. There was a large number of these sign-up lists where you could go and get in a bus or a caravan of cars and do that. We chose not to do those. I'm not judging anyone who did those or folks who liked those. It wasn't something that interested me. We made sure we found all the caches on our own and signed our own log. Let's face it, at the end of the day, it's an individual sport. I realize there are numbers that are being tallied and people do compare themselves. There is no referee, there is no judge, except for yourself. You've got to decide whether or not you feel comfortable logging that cache. Did you find it? And what's your criteria of finding it? Is it just being in a bus that where someone got out of the bus and went and found it?
I go crazy if I expected everybody to live to the same rules that I impose on myself, especially when it comes to signing the logbook. Somebody went looking for one of my caches, and a few days before a river had risen, and it was obvious that my cache had been lifted away. But they took a picture of them right next to the tree where the cache was. I allowed them to go ahead and do a find on that because they were there. They didn't sign a logbook, they didn't actually find the cache. But it was really my fault for it not being there or having put it there where it could be washed away. So I let them do that find. I probably wouldn't even have asked for permission to sign it. If it's not there, I don't sign a logbook. I don't consider it a find. There are times when I've been out videotaping people finding caches, and just because I happen to be there and they find it, I actually go back later. I know where it is, but I still go back later on my own and sign the logbook.
That's a great way of going about it, and I think it's a terrific philosophy. Make sure you sign every log yourself. I know a lot of cachers, especially some of the old-timers, people that I run with back in San Diego, who really believe that's the only way to do it. And I guess if there is a checks and balances at all, it is that cache owner really wants to be vigilant about it, and they have the right to do this. Look at each and every person who's posted a find on their cache page, and if they find fault with it, they can delete it.
As a cache owner, you do have that privilege. Yeah. I've never done that.
I wonder how many people actually go and do these audits. I'll give you an example, at least in terms of San Diego. There's a guy who used to hide some of the best puzzle caches I've ever seen anywhere in the San Diego area, and his name is Tucson Thompson. He lived in San Diego for a while. Any caches that he had published in San Diego have been adopted, but they're very, very difficult puzzle caches, also typically coupled with a very difficult terrain. He just believes that there's a place out there for really super hard caches. Most of his caches are difficulty 3.5 or 4 and above. That's probably being kind. Puzzles he has sometimes require multiple outings to gather information, returning to the computer to do something else, then going back out. Darn it, I've just spent all this time solving this puzzle. Do you really need to put it in the bottom of this ravine or up a tree or wherever it is? But that's where they are. For many of those caches, when they first got placed, they went months before anyone first found them. The easiest way to solve a puzzle cache is by knowing someone else who solved that. He was trying to protect the integrity of those caches at the time the one I solved, which is, to this day, one of my favorites. But I don't believe there had been more than 10 people that have found it. He specifies, please don't share this information with others.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.
The filtering and querying capability that geocaching offers, with the filtering and sorting ability that GSAC offers, there is a way for you to find the type of cache that you like. I'm cache liberal when it comes to that. I will do the lamppost cache. I will do the bison tubes in a tree. I try to keep a balanced diet, Paul. I mean, you know, numbers has never been the most important thing to me. I've been caching since 2001, and I think I just have 1675. Some of that is due to the fact I've taken some pretty long vacations from caching. I've just walked away from it just because life's gotten crazy or other things have interfered.
You were born in St. Louis, and then you were working in San Diego. You find yourself more here in the St. Louis area, going out on caching runs with your dad. I think you guys did a highway caches. There's like 40 on 40, and Highway 70, I think, has a series of them.
The majority of the cache runs that I've done have been launched out of this area, and they've been done with Goshawk and Leroy, Norm V. Mostly, Goshawk has been the catalyst for those. I've enjoyed every one of them, in particular the 40 on 40 series, because I would recommend that to anyone who is thinking about doing some sort of all-day run for numbers or what have you. What I like the most about the 40 on 40 series is what it wasn't. I was really anticipating a series of 40 caches along Highway 40 that were really going to all be in a guardrail, underneath a phone, or in a lamppost. Boy, was I wrong. This was a series of well-thought-out caches that were in varied containers, varied locations, varying degrees of difficulty, that never got boring. For one thing, it was so pleasant to get off of the major interstate, just go down old Highway 40, so you weren't mired in traffic. You had the ability to stop and go and ponder this stuff. The other good thing I liked about the series was that it wasn't complicated in its setup. There weren't a lot of instructions to read. Everything you needed to know for each of the caches was located in the title. In other words, it would say 40 on 40, number 12, and then it gave a clever title that was applicable, that was basically the hint. The title provided a hint for the cache. Sometimes there was an additional hint, but the nice thing was if you went into GSAC and simply printed out a single sheet, name of the cache and a hint, and whether or not it had been found, it was all you really needed. You know what it's like when sometimes you will do a series of caches by a single cacher, and once you've found one of his caches, now I know what I'm looking for on these other four or five. In this particular case, that was not the way it was at all.
You can do in a day, too.
Well, we did it in a day. My dad, Goshawk, and I, we did it driving from St. Charles to Terre Haute. Decided we would go ahead and get a room in Terre Haute and spent the night and did a number of caches in Terre Haute. The series and the travel time could be done in a day. In fact, I've spoken to a number of folks here in the area who did just that. The one downside is we didn't have any phone friends. Goshawk and I made the trip out to North Carolina to go to Geo Woodstock. One of the side trips we did, which was a couple days after, we did a series of caches in a nearby town. Someone told us about this series of caches one could do in a cache run and get 50, 60, 70 caches. We'd never done anything like that. Why don't we do that? It'll be something different to do. I think we did something like 60 or 70 caches that day. The majority of them were actually in this series that had the same title. They were done by the same person, and they were generally under a payphone in a gas station, or they were under a newspaper machine, or they were in a guardrail, or they were in a lamppost. They went straight down the road, and they're all on the right-hand side. You pulled off, you got back on. You didn't even have to cross the road, for gosh sake. Would I recommend that to others? Not so much. For those folks who want the numbers, they don't need my recommendation. They've already done it, or they're going to go do that anyway. They don't need me to tell them about that.
As soon as they hear this, they're on their way out there now.
Right. I will typically look back at a caching experience and say, did I have fun? I have had fun doing these numbers runs if I'm with the right people and there's camaraderie. But it's that moment when you kind of want to quit, you're tired, you're hungry, you're whatever, and someone says, let's do this one more. And you kind of find yourself going, well, wait a minute. This is no longer fun.
Is group caching something that's more specific to the St. Louis area, or do you find that type of thing happening in other areas?
The concept of group caching is kind of a large one. There's a lot of different types of group caching. I have been on a lot of hunts with other people, both here and in San Diego, where I've gone out with four or five other people I know, and we have maybe 10 caches that we're going to find for that day. That type of caching I love a lot. It's a ton of fun. It's what makes the sport, takes it to a different level, in my opinion.
They're already friends of yours.
People I know, or oftentimes I may have met them for the first time. I might know you, but you bring along a friend that I don't know. I like hearing their stories, learning what they like, what they don't like, watching their technique in hunting these different caches, hearing their complaints, hearing what they don't like. I have only gone out on a couple of larger scale group hunts. Most notably, I did one about a year ago in a place called Mission Trails Regional Park, which is in San Diego County. It was a group of about, gosh, I want to say maybe 20, 25 people, but it was a hike over North Fortuna Mountain, which is a pretty large peak for San Diego County, which is not known for having much altitude climb. I was not so comfortable going and making that climb by myself, and I thought it'd be a lot of fun to go with some other people. There were a series of caches that had been placed in the park. It was a lot of fun to go out and do that with all these people. Otherwise, I'm not sure I would have been able to just go do them all. These dreaded evil cache runs that people will do where they pile in buses or cars and one person gets out and runs and signs the log. I've never done one. I don't think I would enjoy it. There were opportunities in North Carolina this year to do those at Geo Woodstock. There was a large number of these sign-up lists where you could go and get in a bus or a caravan of cars and do that. We chose not to do those. I'm not judging anyone who did those or folks who liked those. It wasn't something that interested me. We made sure we found all the caches on our own and signed our own log. Let's face it, at the end of the day, it's an individual sport. I realize there are numbers that are being tallied and people do compare themselves. There is no referee, there is no judge, except for yourself. You've got to decide whether or not you feel comfortable logging that cache. Did you find it? And what's your criteria of finding it? Is it just being in a bus that where someone got out of the bus and went and found it?
I go crazy if I expected everybody to live to the same rules that I impose on myself, especially when it comes to signing the logbook. Somebody went looking for one of my caches, and a few days before a river had risen, and it was obvious that my cache had been lifted away. But they took a picture of them right next to the tree where the cache was. I allowed them to go ahead and do a find on that because they were there. They didn't sign a logbook, they didn't next find the cache. But it was really my fault for it not being there or having put it there where it could be washed away. So I let them do that find. I probably wouldn't even have asked for permission to sign it. If it's not there, I don't sign a logbook. I don't consider it a find. There are times when I've been out videotaping people finding caches, and just because I happen to be there and they find it, I actually go back later. I know where it is, but I still go back later on my own and sign the logbook.
That's a great way of going about it, and I think it's a terrific philosophy. Make sure you sign every log yourself. I know a lot of cachers, especially some of the old-timers, people that I run with back in San Diego, who really believe that's the only way to do it. And I guess if there is a checks and balances at all, it is that cache owner really wants to be vigilant about it, and they have the right to do this. Look at each and every person who's posted a find on their cache page, and if they find fault with it, they can delete it.
As a cache owner, you do have that privilege. Yeah, I've never done that.
I wonder how many people actually go and do these audits. I'll give you an example, at least in terms of San Diego. There's a guy who used to hide some of the best puzzle caches I've ever seen anywhere in the San Diego area, and his name is Tucson Thompson. He lived in San Diego for a while. Any caches that he had published in San Diego have been adopted, but they're very, very difficult puzzle caches, also typically coupled with a very difficult terrain. He just believes that there's a place out there for really super hard caches. Most of his caches are difficulty 3.5 or 4 and above. That's probably being kind. Puzzles he has sometimes require multiple outings to gather information, returning to the computer to do something else, then going back out. Darn it, I've just spent all this time solving this puzzle. Do you really need to put it in the bottom of this ravine or up a tree or wherever it is? But that's where they are. For many of those caches, when they first got placed, they went months before anyone first found them. The easiest way to solve a puzzle cache is by knowing someone else who solved that. He was trying to protect the integrity of those caches at the time the one I solved, which is, to this day, one of my favorites. I don't believe there had been more than 10 people that have found it. He specifies, please don't share this information with others.
This concludes the Slogger Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.